podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ready to go the extra mile in a Volvo mild hybrid SUV this summer? No plug-in required. Whether you go to the mountains this summer, the ocean, or somewhere in between, Grandma! Volvo mild hybrid technology adds to a more refined driving experience so you can summer safely. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com.
Hello and welcome to the 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hooray-ish.
Oh, well, we'll see about that. It's pod 392 and it's Palace's first pod of the season. After our home game, first home game, 0-0 against Brentford, Patrick Vieira's first competitive match at Selhurst Park. Joining me to review that game, we have Mr. Ish himself, Kevin Day. Hello to you.
Hello there.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Ish.
Thank you. Ish, yeah. You say competitive. I didn't notice that much.
Oh, last week was so positive as well.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. It was fine.
Fine. Okay, good. Also, Jack Pearce. Jack, are you fine?
I'm fine. I'm here. disclaimer, I wasn't actually present on Saturday as I was neck deep in mud in Bristol on a tough mudder. So I have caught up with the game. But I am, if you hear any aches and pains, that's just me in the background moving the most mild movements possible. So apologies.
Oh, how's the tough mudder? Did she go over it?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was an experience. Once in a lifetime, very much once in a lifetime experience.
Well, you hope so.
I hope so.
Yeah. And completing the panel today, we love him and we love having him back on. It's the one and only Mr. John Curran. JC, how you doing?
Good to be back on. Good to be back on so early this time. I don't feel like I'm Jordan much anymore.
Yeah, you've been upgraded to... Oh, I don't know. So obviously we've got to talk about that 0-0 draw against Brentford at the weekend. Before we do that, can I get a drum roll for a random patron, please? You'll love this one. It's Mr. Jonathan Pickles.
Hey, Jonathan.
Oh,
hey.
What a fantastic name. I hope that's his real name. You can join our Patreon and get all the rewards like Jonathan does, which includes post-match podcasts after every single game, patron-only merchandise and access to the patron-only WhatsApp club at Patreon, patreon.com/FYP podcast. And all patrons get 20% off our new line of merchandise, which is available to everybody. But if you join the Patreon, you get an automatic 20% discount. And that's available at podcastmerch.co.uk/FYP podcast.
John Curran, of course, will know all about Pickles the dog.
Well, exactly. Next door to me is where the World Cup, or Pickles the dog, found the World Cup. Beulah Hill.
1966.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. History on this podcast.
That's why it's not coming home. It still smells of dog.
Guys, I've got a bit of an admin announcement. For the Spurs game on September 11th, FYP is planning to release another hard copy fanzine. But this isn't just any old FYP fanzine. It's a crossover fanzine with Chris Lehman, who obviously used to edit One More Point. So it's an FYP One More Point crossover. We're still working on names, Kevin. We're thinking maybe five more points or one more plan. I don't know. What do you reckon?
I'm not at that pay grade, am I? There's decisions that are made way higher than the salary level I'm working on this pod.
not on any pay grade.
I'm half-hearted, turn up once a week, talk about football. I'm not decisions, mate.
And you do it very well. Very well. But anyway...
Does that mean next season you're going to do one called One More 5-Year Palace? I echo.
Possibly. We'll see how this one goes. Eastern. 1 year Eastern Eagle, 5 year. Yeah. We'll work on it. But yeah. Anyway, please do keep your eyes out for that on September 11th. And
as long as on the last day of the season, we don't need five more points. That's the that's the saving grace of that one.
But, true. Although that would be, Jack, if we did, that would be.
Typical Palace.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One more plan, five more points. That could be very much Palace's Palace's season in a nutshell. But let's get on with the chat. Let's talk.
Okay. Anyway, so do keep an eye out onto our socials and the one more point socials as well for updates on that. Also, guys, this week we have got our sponsors this week. They're a familiar face. And I will say to you, Kevin, as I set up this link, I would put my mortgage after watching Saturday on Conor Gallagher picking up a suspension for five bookings at some point. Would you agree with that?
Am I meant to agree with that? Or
you can if you want. Yeah.
Yes, I would, yes.
Oh, good. Correct answer.
Well, I never know when you're doing these sponsor links whether I'm meant to join in or not. You don't give any visual clue.
You're right, I don't, apart from just sort of my face in general. But yeah.
Which is doesn't... blank.
It's the exact opposite. Anyway, speaking of mortgages, we're delighted to be sponsored again by Eternity Home Finance. They're a Croydon-based, Palace-supporting, family-run mortgage and protection advisors. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. And we're delighted to have them back on board this season. Speaking of this season, Kevin, it kicked off, our home games kicked off with a 0-0 draw against Brentford. Now, we're going to ban this week a certain Dutch manager's name and a certain team beginning with H as well. But I will say, just to reference that, already Vieira has kicked off or started his career with more points than that manager got. So, first of all, can we finally move on from that memory and eradicate the ghost of that particular manager? And secondly, what were your first impressions of seeing Patrick Vieira's side at Selhurst on Saturday?
It was an odd one, wasn't it? Because there were, to be fair, there were plenty of, moments, but also unfortunately there were quite a few moments as well. I mean, in our half of the pitch we looked confident with the ball, we looked all well organised, we looked defensively sound. I thought Gallagher made a really good debut, a lot of energy, a lot of skill, a lot of ambition, but for most of the game there was just this huge disconnect between what was happening in our half and what was happening with the front three. It looked like they were playing for a different team in a different game, and I don't know whether that's getting used to tactics, getting used to systems, whether or not it's because they're always getting the ball with back to goal, or whether it's simply that by coincidence all of the front three had varying degrees of piss poor game. Basically, none of them played particularly well, and as is well documented, Wolf got a lot of stick on Saturday night. But they just weren't very good up front. I know you know, Benteke will argue that he didn't get the service, and the one cross he scored, he should have possibly scored. But you know, Benteke needs to look at Mikel Antonio last night. He needs to look at what a centre forward has to do. If things aren't going well for him, he's got to go hunting for the ball. He's got to stop the centre backs. But he didn't do any of that. Wilf just had one of his old style sulky games. Just didn't seem to want to get involved. Whether that's because of the new referees allowing more physical defending for a while. Schluppi's not an out and out attacker. Full stop. So there are plenty of encouraging signs at one end of the pitch, and virtually nothing but disappointment at the other. To be honest, I thought.
I mean, not a new issue for Palace, that really. Yeah. Been an issue for the last couple of seasons. Yeah, yeah. And suspect that you're right about Schluppi, and suspect that there was a few people filling in holes that will be filled by other players when they become available again, hopefully. JC, what was your impression of the sort of the Vieira DNA, or if you will, the new Vieira that Palace are going for this season? What did you learn from that, from Saturday?
Yeah, I don't think I really saw much of a DNA yet, and that's not a criticism towards Patrick Vieira. I think it's something that's going to have to be developed, partly because he doesn't have the squad yet. He doesn't have the players. He doesn't, you know, some injured, some haven't been brought in. But you certainly saw, I think there was a bit more zip in the team, not necessarily in relation to passing the ball quicker, but a little bit more energy. That was maybe one positive. With the top three, they did do a press a little bit more on the goalkeeper when they were passing out, which I didn't see that much with under Roy. And then there's the big kind of debate about what we're seeing, trying to pass the ball through the line, through the high press, which if that is going to be the kind of mainstay of the tactics, that will take time to develop as well. I don't think we're going to be seeing that looking nice and silky straight away. So I'm still... I'd like to kind of almost answer that question in five or six or seven games.
Jack, can I go back to the attacking issues that Kevin brought up there? Obviously, something we've talked about before on this podcast this season. Do they worry you, or can you see any sort of indication that it might be something that Vieira is able to sort out going forward?
I think that wholly depends on the recruitment between now and the end of the window. I think the fact that Schlupp had to start on the left-hand side of a front three, and there was little challenge from the fans about that because it struck most people as the right choice, says it all, really. In terms of his options at the moment, he's limited. And with the options he has available to him at the moment, it means that he's having to play our best player, most would argue, out of position. So Will starting on the right-hand side, I don't think he's most effective there. I think he's always shown that he's best coming from the left-hand side. And I know at the second half, he did move Schlupp over to the right-hand side and Will to the left-hand side. So I just think until the transfer window ends and we know what Vieira's got to play with, that's a really difficult question to answer. But yeah, you know, from what I've seen of Saturday and from what I've read of Saturday, it looked like the defence midfield was fairly well set. I know there were question marks over Kouyaté's performance, but the worries are all about the front third, the final third, and I think it's clear that there's business still to be done that needs to be done if we're not going to be struggling. But you know, unfortunately, that does mean that effectively we're going to be playing with a 35 game season rather than a 38 game season, but. The solace is we're not the only club in that position. I think quite a bit of business is going to still be done between now and the end of the window. But I'd agree, just the point that I think it was Kevin made about Schlupp. I just don't think Schlupp is a natural attacker in terms of his skill set. I think he's better coming in from deeper. I think that the power and the drive that we see from him, which for me is the best element of his game, is better when he's got more room to run into. I think when you're restricted to that final third and you're getting the ball in that final third and have that lack of space to burst into, it's difficult. So I don't think we're seeing the best of Schlupp if he's deployed as part of a front three. But, you know, it's not just this season. You know, we haven't been free-flowing for a number of seasons. But I think we just need to see how the next week pans out in terms of the business. So fingers crossed Dougie's got a few more deals in the future coming up.
I think sometimes, regardless of new systems, getting used to things, whatever, sometimes senior players like Wilf and Benteke, there's an element of personal responsibility here. It's like, yeah, Wilf's playing out of position. Benteke's not getting as much of the ball as he wanted. So make things happen. Wilf had one of his sulky games. It's like, do what other players do. But if Benteke's not getting the ball, then go and find the ball. Go and make sure you're in a position to take it in a different part of the pitch. Go to the halfway line and get it. Drive forward with it if you want to. Wilf just didn't seem to want them. You know, a lot of the time, Wilf was getting the ball with his back to goal, and fair enough, and maybe he was told to lay it off. But he just didn't seem to want to impose himself on the game. And it's down to players like that to do so. Conor Gallagher's, what, 21? And he was trying right from the start to impose himself on the game, to impose himself on the opposition. And yeah, if he'd scored that one, we hit the angle of the post and the bar after 5 minutes, it might have been a different story. But he was at least trying to break the line and get beyond the attackers, and they weren't really doing anything to facilitate that, to help that. They were just kind of, Benteke didn't really move out of his sort of 20-yard zone. Yeah, and again, yes, if he wants to be a better striker, he's got to take that one chance. He's got to do what Vardy does. It didn't happen last night. But how many games have we seen Jamie Vardy not get a sniff when he does get one chance? And that Wardy, again, I think we'll talk, we need to talk about Wardy, but he gets that brilliant crossing. And it's essentially, it's a classic centre-forward header that he should have put away. You know, so it's no point those two players who clearly looked unhappy afterwards. It's like, you've got to make something happen sometimes.
Yeah, I do agree about Benteke. He probably should have hit the target with that header. I don't think overall he was awful. I thought he was sort of did his bits and bobs okay, but was obviously, as you say, not in the game as much as he'd like. Wilf, I agree, is going to be very interesting to see what Vieira does with him. And Vieira talked after the game about, we all love Wilf, I love Wilf, and we're going to get the best out of Wilf. But it'll be very interesting to see how he goes about doing that, because it certainly hasn't been a brilliant start to the season from Wilf. But we know, obviously, that we need him on his best to get the best out of this team.
My concern about that, actually, about Wilf, it did feel a little bit like in the first half he made the decision he was only going to give 60% of what he could give. You know, and that's unfair on him, because it... he's a professional, and definitely in the last third, then when the game got stretched, he came into the game. But there were some concerns, one of which was if he is being marked out of the game, there's no one else in the team who can offer a threat. Eze's injured, etc., etc. Yeah. I agree with Kevin. He has to do more. He has to draw the fouls a bit more, and it just wasn't happening. But I was quite concerned that after two games, Patrick Vieira has had to come out with a statement about Wilfried Zaha. So that gives me the feeling that he's now pinpointing one player. That's not his fault. So now Wilfried Zaha becomes the focal point again.
Yeah.
Not the team culture. Not that you look at West Ham yesterday. It was a team unit playing football. And they've had a season to do that and develop it, and I get that. Right? But this idea now that Wilf is now top of Vieira's mind of making sure he's okay and making it public. That's not good after two games.
Difficult though, isn't it, Jack, that for a new manager, because you have to make a really quick decision. Do I come out and do what JC has said, or do I leave it? Do I have to show that I'm strong with my squad? Do I, you know, big decisions to make early doors for a new manager.
Big decisions. I don't agree with John. I think it was right for Vieira to say. I mean, he was asked a direct question. I watched the press conference last night, and he was asked a direct question about Wilfried Zaha. So I think he was right to say, and he was supportive of Wilf. You know, he wasn't making any issue that we don't know about Wilf. You know, he said that Wilf's the full package, and that, you know, part of his behavior on the pitch is why some people love him and why some people hate him. So I don't know about Vieira. I mean, you know, he probably needs more time with Wilf to know exactly how that relationship's going to work. But with Wilf, I mean, I wasn't there on Saturday, but I have seen footage of him scoring up with Sergi Canos. And I just think Wilf is wasting far too much time getting in, you know, fights or squabbles, which last all game in a lot of situations with absolute nobodies. I mean, how is Sergi Canos, you know, who's playing his second ever top flight game, getting under Wilf Zaha's skin? I just don't understand that. I just think Wilf is, you know, the age that he is with the experience that he has. I just think he should be managing himself better on the pitch. You know, everybody has an expectation with Wilf in terms of Palace fans, and a lot of non-Palace fans as well, that he's going to turn it on a lot of games. But he will have games like he had on Saturday. But that said, he did create our two best chances, or in terms of the closest we came to scoring. He plays a lovely pass into Gallagher, which leads to Gallagher hitting the woodwork. And then it's his clever play and his well-timed layoff to MacArthur, which leads to MacArthur's shot, which is very well saved by Raya. So he does, in a game where he's not had a particularly good game, he has created our two best opportunities to score. So he had a bad game, but he didn't have the worst game he could have had. But in answer to the question about Vieira, I think we need to see how that relationship builds over the next few weeks. It'll be things like, will he play at Watford tonight? You know, will Vieira say to him, you know, no, you're the same as everyone else. You know, I'm sending half the first team squad, so you're going as well. Or will he give him the night off? So we need a few more weeks. And again, I think the relationship that Vieira has with Zaha will be moulded by the other options that Vieira has in terms of the attacking three to supplement the threat that Wilf has.
As I hinted very briefly right at the start, I do think there was an element with Wilf right from the start of the game of showing the ref that he was getting fouled. Because we've got this new, and the pendulum will swing back. As I think Jurgen Klopp is right to say on Saturday, the physical. It's great to see football's a physical game, and it's great to see more stuff being allowed. But there were two or three tackles by both teams on Saturday that should have been pulled up. It wasn't just Brentford, and Wilf got a couple of really early. They were fouls, as simple as that. So I think Wilf was saying to the ref, look, the interpretation of the guidance might have changed here, but Wilf needs to do that in other ways. He needs to not stop and look at the ref. Wilf needs to think, well, okay, this is going to be how it is for the next few games, and I've just got to keep playing till the whistle blows. I've just got to show that I'm better than that. But I think that was partly the frustration. And I think we'll see that from a lot of skillful, talented players in the next couple of weeks, where someone like Conor Gallagher just seems to kind of revel in it and maybe won't get those five yellow cards you talked about and we talked about pre-season, because for the first few games, they're all going to get a bit more leeway. What will happen is somebody will get seriously injured, and then all those pundits on telly, all those people who used to play football and don't see why modern footballers don't have to get battered like they get battered. Some, they'll, you know, the Chris Waddles of this world will go, well, that's the referee's fault. And it's the fault of the pundits who spent the last 2 years going, game's gone, you can't tackle. because now they're letting players tackle and someone's going to get hurt until the, you know, it's like the handball law last year. The handball law was crazy for the first 6 weeks until everyone decided to change it just in time for us to not give a penalty away against Everton. Yeah, so I think Wilf was frustrated by the attention he was getting, but he needs to be better than that. Again, he's going to get that attention. It's as simple as that. Those players have just come out of the Championship. They'll have been excited about playing against Wilf Zaha. They'll have wanted to be stuck in against Wilf, and that needed to have been addressed before the game.
Can I just add to Kevin's point there about the referee in particular, because I know there's a lot of praise for the referees, and you know, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, you know, two huge voices within the game, and they've been really vocal about how much they're enjoying referees let more things go, and the game seems to be better for it. But these are professional athletes who have fine-tuned their game over the last 6, 7, 8 seasons. You know, Wilf is now in his 8th full Premier League season, and he's playing to a certain way that he has learned how to play in the Premier League. And now, all of a sudden, he is being hit harder, and it's not being rewarded with foul and therefore territory for the team. And as a consequence, he is going to be at greater risk of injury because he's going to be having to try and learn a new facet of his game. Yeah. And I think the pace at which the Premier League is played at is often forgotten by those that have recently stopped playing. And I think the pace is probably the hardest element to fine-tune for a professional footballer. And that's why people talk about the pace of the Premier League versus, you know, teams from the Championship coming up, and or teams that play in Europe. You know, the Premier League teams play at a faster pace in Europe and teams can't deal with it. So if the referees have, for whatever reason, taken it upon themselves, or the PGMOL have decided to, you know, go with a tougher stance in terms of what's a foul and what's not, that's going to be very difficult for certain players, the likes of Zaha, Sadio Mane, you know, a player like Christian Pulisic at Chelsea, who play on the fine lines of being hit hard or making a fullback look very silly. It's going to take time for them to get used to that. And I think while Wilf will need to get used to it, if that is going to be a permanent change to the management of games by referees this season, I think we should give him time. And I think the pundits need to appreciate that. But Graham Souness is going to Graham Souness. So what can you do?
I think just on the last two games, Chelsea and Brentford, I didn't see any of that. I saw Wilf not getting himself involved, giving the ball away. I don't buy this thing of the new way the referees are going to... the new way referees are refereeing is going to have an impact on Wilf. I think Klopp's moaning was all about the fact that he doesn't have 100 million to spend on one player. So, I mean, I really don't think... I think we're at danger of giving Wilf too many get-out-of-jail cards. You know, the last Palace manager that dropped him was Pardew as a means of kind of, you know, he's undroppable, which is fantastic kind of, you know, thing. But there were times when Vieira was having a go with him on the touchline, you know, and that's new for Wilf. I mean, I'm not saying Vieira is an experienced manager, but he's an experienced world figure in football. And for Wilf to see someone on the touchline berating him, you know, that's no refereeing decision.
I think, John, regardless of how you and I interpret what referees are doing, Wilf clearly did interpret that he was being unfairly treated, because we saw in the first 5 minutes...
But he was doing that last season. He was doing that last season and the season before.
He was classic hands in the air, why haven't I not been... You know, and Wilf needs to realise, until it settles down, he needs to realise that he is going to get fouled more. It's as simple as that. And all the club need to work out a system to let him know that he's going to get fouled more. But he went into classic, frustrated, moody Wilf really early on. And as you say... I'm that's not an excuse. I'm pointing out that that's how he was playing. And to be perfectly honest, you know, Vieira talked about a lot of love for Wilf. There wasn't a lot of love for Wilf where I was sitting in the 90th minute. And we're at a situation, we've had this conversation every year he's been at the club. If someone came in with a bid for him, 40 million quid now, or players, I'd say take it.
Yeah, but do you know what? No one does.
No, they won't. I'm not sure Wilf is ever going to have the same impact on the Palace game that he's had before. Partly because of the way we set up, partly because we haven't got somebody like him elsewhere on the pitch. And it may do that we will when Elise and Eze are back, and that the attention of the back four and the midfield is spread. But at the moment, it's very easy for you know, even a team like Brentford, once you saw Wilf out, you've pretty much sorted Palace out.
Well, I mean, as Jack says, we will see what happens when those players do come. And we've been saying it since Balassi left, haven't we, about the balance up top and the targeting of Wilf. hopefully, and we keep hearing that Elise and SA are ahead of schedule, so hopefully we'll find that out sooner rather than later.
But sorry, okay, we're talking about Elise, who's 19 years old, has never played in the Premiership. Are we sure?
But then we said that about SA last season.
He's 21, 22. He had, you know, so I mean, this is again, we're going to have to be careful about how we're building up Elise here.
No, I hear that. I hope Palace are targeting another winger as well in the next 10 days to add more options up there up front, definitely.
They have to, JD, because you can't have Jordan Ayew as your only senior option from the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's a try, but we've talked about Ayew before. And I know that when he came on, perhaps we did improve in the final third, but he is not your go-to off the bench.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, we had a question from @BigAlThinks.
Hi,
Big Al, who said, at this point, do you think any signing is better than having to make do with Ayew and Schlupp on the wing? And it's a very fair point. On Saturday, those as the other only options are not good enough at the moment. Can I move on?
Yeah, sorry, just quickly, though, but John makes a fair point about Elise, because I think it's brilliant to an extent that we're signing potential. That's great. But I'd also like to sign a couple of players that have got Premier League experience that can slot straight into the team without us having to go, they might be good. They might, you never know. At the moment, we've got a lot of eggs in that potential basket. Yeah. And let's spend the money to bring a player. I'd like to see someone like Will Hughes come in who's got experience in the Premier League. I'd like to see a winger come in who's got experience in the Premier League that can contribute 6 or 7 goals and is used to it. Because I think if all you're doing is buying potential, then you're kind of buying a potentially really good Championship side next season.
Mm. But I am buoyed by the fact that when Eze came in last season, after a couple of months of settling, was absolutely fantastic. So that bridge can be gapped. But you don't want to rely on it for everyone, but at least it was proof that it can be done. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting, whatever it is, 9 or 10 days we've got left.
I'd like to see a bridge being gapped. It's better than a gap being bridged.
Does that sounds a bit dodgy. Anyway, on that note, let's wrap up part one, because in part two, we're going to be picking from Saturday our winners and losers.
Ready to go the extra mile in a Volvo mild hybrid SUV this summer? No plug-in required. Whether you go to the mountains this summer, the ocean, or somewhere in between, Grandma! Volvo mild hybrid technology adds to a more refined driving experience so you can summer safely. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit, because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to part two of the Public Plan Podcast.
Hey!
Sponsored by Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Right, guys, this is a part of the podcast where we're going to split. We're going to leave our public people. If you're listening on the free part of the pod, you are now going to listen to a clip from the Pod Extra from Saturday after that game with Watford as a little teaser as to what you can get on the Patreon. But we're now going to go into a patron-only section where we pick our winners and losers from Saturday. So if you want to hear what our picks are, do sign up at patreon.com/FYP podcast. Otherwise, you will just get a little clip from Saturday. But if you're listening on the Patreon feed, then we're going to go and leave the public feed people now.
It was a very uncomfortable situation in trying to play through the press, and it was again today, to be honest. We struggled really to play out, and found it very, very difficult. I think probably the biggest problem with that was deploying Cech Kouyaté in that sort of holding midfield role, where he acts very well as a sort of destroyer, if you like, as a negative player for a team that doesn't have a lot of possession. But unfortunately, in possession, he struggled, particularly in the first half. Like, and his lack of comfort on the ball meant we couldn't really play. And it's just, it looks very disjointed. But I think it's going to be, you know, until... If you want to play this way, I don't think it's a problem, but you're going to have to get better players to do it with and move the ball quicker, really, you know, and that's part of the problem. In fact, the best thing we did in the game today was we made three forward passes and ended up with a chance across the six-yard box in midway through the second half, maybe. Forward pass into midfield, I think McArthur put the ball in behind, ball comes across the box, chance. If we're going to play this way, you've got to move the ball much quicker and do everything faster. But that requires people that are more comfortable. McArthur's fine. He looks very comfortable. But the problem at the moment is that your two wide players today, Jeffrey Schlupp and Wilfred, you're just not getting them on the ball enough to really affect the game. And Wilfred only sort of got on the ball in the sort of last quarter of the game, really, when it got a little bit stretched. And, you know, we worked out that if we drop in for the goal kick and put those bodies on top of us, we can then clip over the top and get into Benteke and play off him, which then made him a little bit more effective and made it work for us a little bit. But I think it was very difficult, and it's very clunky right now, and it looks what it is, a sort of disjointed outfit. Yeah.
In turn, you said mentioning the Huddersfield game, and I mentioned it earlier. The one thing that I said was a positive, because in terms of, like you said, going forward and pushing out, it felt a bit disjointed. One positive that you can take from today is that it wasn't a detriment to our defence.
We didn't concede three goals. I agree. You know, defensively, the two centre halves were very good, and I think they are very good players. And you know, that was good. We were under pressure for spells of the game. I think we got very lucky just after half time. There was a free header in the 6-yard box, which was an absolute sitter. Had we missed it, I'd probably be grizzling a bit. But I thought those two were particularly good. And I thought Tyrick Mitchell was better today. Wardy, I thought, struggled at times, and Cech on the ball. But as the game wore on, Cech got better, really. He won a few tackles and got the ball off, but he's just not very fluent. If you're going to play this way, you've got to be better at it than we are right now. But it's very different to what we've done previously, I think, in terms of, you know, in order to play out in the way that we are, we've got to be absolutely super comfortable, and every player's going to have to be super comfortable on the ball.
That comes in time, though.
Yeah, but it's also in talent as well, Trevor. You need personnel that are suitable there, for playing that way.
There's a lot of fresh personnel in the team as well, and we've signed players that are comfortable on the ball. Anderson, proven comfortable on the ball as a centre-back. Gallagher's proved comfortable on the ball that can be box-to-box. There's also a period of time where you have to look at it and go, these players are capable of doing what we think they can be doing and what we want them to do, but it's the second game of the season and we're not trying to force anything that I don't think our players are capable of. I think when De Boer was here, we tried to force things that our team and our squad wasn't capable of. Today showed glimpses of the fact that we are capable of trying to expand and be progressive in that style of football, but also
Kiarte's not, once Luka comes back, Kiarte's not in the middle anyway, is he? Really?
I would have thought that in order to do better, we're going to have somebody playing in that, is it number six they call these players now? I used to call them holding midfield players, but they call him a six now, and two number eights is what we're playing with. Yeah, that's the common
terminology. I agree with you that it definitely needs maybe one, possibly two players in that starting team to do it. But it doesn't feel this season, after last game and today's game, that we're trying to force a style of play that our players aren't capable of producing. It feels like the capability's there. It's just going to take a few weeks or a few months to get into that style. And like I said before, not at the detriment of conceding loads of goals in the process. We can still nab nil-nils and get a few results.
I think that's something that Vieira doesn't get a huge amount of credit for, is that I think at Nice, he basically, his Nice team were, was it Nice? His Nice team were conceded one of the lowest figures of goals. So I think defensive solidity is going to be a big part of that. But as Adam says, the key thing, and as I said before Adam turned up, is to have like that kind of holding midfielder who is comfortable in possession, able to move the ball quickly. The thing about Kiarte, I thought, in the second half, the reason why he looked more effective is that when he got the ball, he ran with it instead of just kind of putting his foot on it and trying to look. He literally just ran out of the... He basically forced his way out of the press, and that in turn actually made things more difficult for Brentford, and it worked in Palace's favour. And we could have probably snatched something in the last 20 minutes if that execution had just been a little bit better.
Which is something you hope will come, and I guess that's something to look towards. I want to know from Adam, what are the positives?
Well, the two centre-halves, very good. And I said last week, you know, again, all that sort of criticism last week, you know, it's kind of... We signed some very good players, I think, you know, but we haven't signed enough good players, and he had nothing to change the game with today. Nothing to change the game with.
True.
Idea that people have, that are, you know, people going, oh, he doesn't take into account we've got three players injured. There's probably always going to be three players injured. That's the nature of the business, right? You need 25 players, not, oh, well, we didn't have Connor Wickham much and we didn't have Mamadou Saka much, so we don't need to replace them. That's a myth. You need 25 players or more. We've got the African nations. We're going to have COVID situations. We're going to have all of that to contend with, and injuries that are, you know, that are there. And at the moment, we've got Nathan Ferguson injured, Eber Etchiesi injured, which we knew last May, Michael Olise injured, and Luca injured, right? They're your four players. That's probably going to be a normal situation. Yeah. That means if you have a 25-man squad, you've got 21 players to select from. We had two goalkeepers on the substitutes bench today. I've got to remember whether I put sub bonuses in Remy's contract after that, because that was one I wasn't expecting, to be fair.
But I completely agree, which is why obviously IU came on and was the only attacking player really available. I do think, and I'm not saying he's the answer at all, I do think IU played quite well when he came on. Yeah. I thought he used it quite well. Sat behind JD Senior, and he said he was really surprised. He's like, we've played better with IU on the pitch. Like, I couldn't quite compute that IU would improve a team, but I thought he did okay. But obviously he is not the answer, and you need, if you're going to take the game, you know, a game like that we could have won at the end, although I do think a draw was a fair result, you're obviously going to need better options off the bench, and IU is not the answer.
I think the forward limitations are just there. First of all, Wilfried's your best player. Didn't get him on the ball enough for the first hour of the game, probably, or first three quarters of the game, really. You didn't get Jeffrey Schlapp on the ball, so it wasn't particularly effective. Conor Gallagher was very positive in the first half, and he's running with the ball and did quite well. But we really struggled. We lost the ball too many times in our own half in the first half of the game, for sure. We caught in possession too many times. And I would say to you that with that situation, we're going to... The way I see it is that if we're going to play this 4-3-3 with a number 6 and two number 8s, it's Luca or Riedewald, it's Schlapp or Eze, it's MacArthur or Gallagher. That's essentially, I think, where you're getting to. You've got two players for each. But then your forward options are Benteke, who we were right to keep, but he's probably not going to be that effective because we're not going to cross the ball very much at the moment, by the way we're going to play. We're not going to use him in a way that probably makes him really effective. And I think we need... I think everything for me has got to be quicker, just quicker. You know, we've got to move the ball quicker, pass forwards more, but play into people that aren't comfortable. There were a few times where I thought, like, for example, you know, Joel Ward played forward, but sort of gave it to people at really tight situations. It was quite difficult to handle. It wasn't really a progressive forward pass. It was a bit more like, you have it, do you know what I mean? It wasn't. And I thought that was difficult. You know, I'd I just thought it was, there were positive parts, but I'd see it as overall fairly disjointed without creating too many what you would call real clear-cut goal-scoring opportunities. And probably I was hoping that the last 15 minutes we might just get a set play and Joachim Andersen, who I think will be a big asset in the opposition's penalty box, get up and win a header for us and maybe nick us a result. But as you said, I don't think that would have been justified on the balance of the game, really, for us to win the game, I think. So, I, you know, it's a work in progress, but, and I take Chap's points that we are sort of, you know, we are saying that it's a work in progress and that we're going to try and do better, but or we will improve. But it's a very hard league, this, and the fixtures that we've got coming up are very difficult. And if we've got 1 point going into the Brighton game, which is the sixth game, and we lose, I think there will be a very there'll be a very different mood around the fan base in terms of where we are. And that, you know, let's hope that's not the case. But West Ham, Tottenham, Liverpool in between, they're very difficult games. They are three of the top six that we last season. West Ham finished fifth, didn't they?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. No, so did they finish fifth? Well, six, but they say three of the top six for sure anyway. And that's and we knew it was a really difficult start. I mean, Norwich had a difficult start and have lost eight goals without registering in the first two games. But I don't want us to get caught in a catch-up situation. One of the best bits about Roy's tenure is that we never really ever let ourselves get, once he got us out of the mire, we never really went back in there very often. I think we were only in the bottom three once in that time. Now, you know, that can obviously depend early in the season on the quality of the fixtures, but confidence in winning when you're trying to redo what we're trying to do, you know, would help massively. But it's actually very difficult to do, and it's very difficult to do it against the top six teams anyway. You know, as I said last week, you know, you're already going to Chelsea. If you've got your best players available, you're still not expected to win. You've got no reason to expect a result. But I think, to me, there is a difference between that and not being competitive enough, which I don't think we were last week in terms of... And I don't mean as in the players' willingness or lack of effort. I mean the squad that we turned up with Chelsea, it was like going to war with a penknife, really. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of, you know, you are... And they've got big cannons and grenades and bombs to throw at you, you know, and it's... I think... After 9 years in the Premier League, you know, we should be in a better spot. And as I said, it's all very well turning over players, and I'm not unhappy with any of the players that have gone, and I'm very happy with the players we've signed. But the season doesn't start in October, it starts on the middle of August, and we should be ready, bar maybe one or two players. And my understanding is that we're only looking to bring in two more players at this point, but I think that's probably very changeable, and I think we need three forward players. And I think you've got to have eight forwards, and at the moment we've got five, including Mateta, who hasn't convinced anybody yet that he's a Premier League footballer, and Rakitić, who hasn't convinced anyone yet he's a Premier League footballer either, but for differing reasons. Yeah, I'm not telling you. I like the kid. I think he's a good player, but he should be somebody that we've got eight forward players, and he's pushing Jordan Ayew out or somebody else because he's pushing his way through, knocking the manager's door down by saying, you've got to play me. We shouldn't be going, well, we've got this 17-year-old kid here and he's going to be one of our six forward players for the season. We need eight forward players. You need four strikers and four wide players, or you can say three and four, and Jordan Ayew be sort of a, as I said, you know, yeah, you can do both. But really, these players cost a lot of money, and I would be concerned at this point with the level of player that we're being linked to at the moment doesn't smack of us spending big money on, you know, if it's Noni Mandueki, that's a different story. But at the moment, it's Ademola Lookman, not quite made it at Fulham, not quite made it in Leipzig, not quite made it at Everton. But I wouldn't be against signing him. Mm. And but again, you see, I'll be critical again of the fact that a week's passed since the Chelsea game. Yeah. We haven't bought another player through the door.
I think it's also clear that Patrick Vieira feels that way too, because he's made that clear in the last two press conferences now. He made it clear before the Chelsea game and before this game that we needed to strengthen and that needs to happen. So when the manager is saying that, I mean, I think
clearly listens to the podcast.
But I think Roy didn't.
Maybe he's going to employ me as his PR. What do you reckon?
Thank you for your winners and losers there, guys. I think that worked as a feature, didn't it? So,
yeah.
And that is just for our lovely patrons as well. So if you didn't hear that, then you're on the public feed. Do join our patron to hear that at patreon.com/FOP podcast. After the break, we've got questions from our listeners.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit, because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA. It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit, because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Hello, and welcome back to part three of the 5-Year Plan podcast.
Hey!
Sponsored by Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Let's dive straight into some questions. Here's one from my good friend, Giles Paley-Phillips.
Hey, Giles.
Hey, Giles.
Hello, Giles.
And Giles says, have we finally turned a corner? You knew it was coming from someone. Thank you, Giles. First one in with that one. But then Leif Anderson Forehead, hi Leif, replied and said, the only corner we turned was in the queue waiting to get in Saturday. Well played. 2-1. Excellent. Let's move on. There are a couple of questions, actually. And JC, you alluded to this in the last part. On Guaita. So Steve Burr.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. If Selzy's on, which he's not this week, but of course you can hear him on the Pod Extra, on patreon.com, says, can you ask me his thoughts on Guaita? Seemingly comes out a lot more to punch the ball. Is this due to Brentford's strength at set pieces, or has he been working on this? How does he feel about him punching the ball more? We will put that to Selzy on the post-match pod, so we'll get his thoughts on that as well. The Hungry Runner is another listener.
Hello,
Hi, Hungry. Who says, can you see Butland replacing Guaita this season? What are your thoughts on both those points, Jesse?
Okay, so I thought Guaita's punching was due to the physical presence and the targeting of Brentford. And I must say that Guaita dominated the box in the first half. There were about three or four long throws coming in, corners. I thought he was exceptional, actually, with his punching. All his punches were very clean, so he knew what he was doing, and he really got involved. And that's going to give your centre-backs a real sense of confidence if your keeper's going to be doing that. So I thought he was instrumental in us getting a clean sheet and instrumental in us getting a point. You know, he didn't have to do any really spectacular saves. It was just the dominance. You know, I thought Tony wasn't much. I thought Benteke was probably better than, you know, Tony. The thing about Butland and Guaita, there is a problem about Guaita's game that I think we know, but it was shown up a bit more against Chelsea and Brentford, and that's his distribution and kicking. And the problem with this is it even goes back to when they're playing it out from the back. He's too slow in releasing the ball to either Anderson or Greer, and he doesn't do it with pace. Remember what I said earlier. So when he's passing the ball, the forwards are closing in too much. He hesitates too. It feels like it's not natural enough to him. Then when he does go long, he kind of slices the ball with his kicks. That it means it hangs there quite a lot. And sometimes it could be too short. Sometimes he was doing those looping passes to Ward, but it was too delayed. So Ward's not good enough on the ball to be able to do something with it. So this is a concern of mine. This is the only concern I have about Guaita, is his kicking. Now, we used to be able to say in the past, that's the one bad part of the goalkeeper is let's say his kicking. Today, in today's game, it has to be a part of the goalkeeper. You know, it can't just... And there was a thing, where, I think it was the Chelsea game. I was at the game, and the warm-up, you had Dean Kiely on the halfway line, and Butland would be kicking long to Dean Kiely as though it was a kind of pitching wedge or a sand wedge in golf. And Dean Kiely wouldn't move, and he would just catch the ball and throw it back. Every time Guaita would kick to him, he would have to move three or four steps this side, that side, to get the ball. Which now, if you're a centre-forward... waiting for that kick, you need to be like more of a Butland. You know exactly where it's going to be going, rather than it being a bit more wayward. Now, if he can't kick properly, it gives the ball back. It puts us back under pressure, and that's the key problem there. So I don't think he should be replaced by Butland, and I don't think his kicking will improve because he's in his 30s and it's about the ergonomics and the gait and how you position yourself. But it does concern me in this kind of more modern, fast way of playing football. That it's not accurate enough.
If you look at Arsenal, have had two disastrous defensive performances, and the way they played against Brentford, I'm sure would have given Brentford a lot of confidence that they could do the same to Palace. And we dealt really comfortably for the most part with the long element of the Brentford game, with the corners, with the long throws, and that was down to Guaita. My issue with Guaita, and it's an issue with a lot of Premier League teams, is just because the laws have changed to allow you not to have to clear the penalty box with your kick doesn't mean you have to not do that. Just because you're allowed to have a defender in the box to pass short to, it's not compulsory. And I think there are some clubs who do it much better than others, and it doesn't suit us in every opportunity. And as John says, Wardy is an issue because you've got three, as we talked about before, you've got three young dynamic defenders, and then you've got Wardy, who's been brilliant, who shouldn't be starting, who, yes, put in a really good cross, but for the most part, just hasn't got the energy to take the ball forward when it comes to him, and was quite often the one that Guaita was receiving the ball from. And Brentford players were on him straight away, and Wardy, bless him, hasn't got the ability to hold the ball. He never panics, and he never really makes visual mistakes, but in terms of what's happening with the rest of the team, I think Wardy's days are numbered, with our grateful thanks and with a place on the bench for most games. But sometimes Guaita just needs to look long occasionally. There are one or two occasions when a quick release would have seen Wilf or Benteke getting the ball, and you have to rely on the fact that Wilf and Benteke can hold the ball up long enough for people to join in. It just doesn't suit us. It's like when Mandanda joins. It doesn't, you know, our two centre-backs didn't want the ball from Mandanda. It's as simple as that. They wanted him to get it to the halfway line. And sometimes that's the best thing to do. Vieira is trying to change the way we play and wants us to play out, but you know, there are other options basically.
But those Palace centre backs will want it to come short.
They will. The centre backs will. But it wasn't going to them. That's the trouble.
No, but that's exactly. That's what I mean. Spurs are a really good team who can play it short, but then Lloris will play it long. Straight away if he needs to, but he'll make it as a quick decision. Where Guaita dwells too much.
Yeah.
You know that that's my issue. He dwells too much.
It's very interesting. I remember we had the guys from New York City FC podcast on the start of the season, and one of the things they said about Vieira was there were times during games where fans were urging the team to get forward, and the team did want to recycle and go backwards and take a while with the build up. That included the goalkeeper. And it's interesting. We did see bits of that on Saturday in the second half. But again, it's a work in progress, and I'm sure that will be something that the team will get used to.
We'll see Butland tonight in the Watford game.
Yeah.
Butland will play the cup game. My concern about putting the presumption that, you know, Butland could just come in, and I do recall him being fairly decent on the ball at Stoke and his time at Birmingham. the thing we need to consider with Butland is he had a real crisis of confidence at Stoke, and that's why he was available for 1.5 million.
Stoke
were happy to let, you know, a previous England international become their reserve goalkeeper and then sell him on the cheap, because he really had lost the sense of who he was previously. So if we were to put him in, while his distribution may be better than Vicente's, we would need to be assured that he has recovered from what he was going through at Stoke in order to be the Premier League goalkeeper that he was previously. And I'm not saying he couldn't be again, but there would need to be the assurance that he could actually tend the goal as well as, you know, provide decent ball out to fullbacks and the centre half. So it's an interesting one. I can't see Vicente being dropped anytime soon unless we start to concede chances and goals from mistakes at the back. And as Kevin and JC have both said, we haven't done that yet, albeit it not looking fantastic yet. But that is what we should take into account, is that the goalkeeper and the two centre halves started the game for the first time on Saturday. So it might be familiarity breeds confidence as well.
Gaeta was at fault for the goal at Chelsea as well.
The second one.
The other two were great, but the second one was an error. So.
But not from distribution.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. I don't think there's any indication that he's not going to be our goalkeeper for the foreseeable future. But I think Butland is a really good... They've got, in Dean Carley, they've got a really good goalkeeping coach as well. And I think from what I've heard of him, if anybody can rebuild a keeper's confidence, it's him.
Yeah,
it does feel
and
a little bit.
I really hope he does get a game tonight and plays well because we, you know, it could be an injury. You know, Vicente only has to his hamstring, and we're relying on Jack Butland.
It does feel a little bit like when we moved from Cifroni to Hennessy, because when we signed Hennessy, everyone was talking about, well, his distribution is so good, he can kick it really far. But then we saw over the preceding years that actually there was many areas of the game that weren't as good as Cifroni, and actually that was more frustrating than making up with the kicking. So
yeah, the whole stopping goals thing wasn't brilliant for him.
Waiting in photos. You know, not ideal. But anyway, let's move on to a question from Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Who says, Nketiah, take or leave? And I guess this is a link to the rumour that we are after Eddie Nketiah from Arsenal. The latest reports seem to be that we've offered 10 million, Arsenal want 20, which seems quite a lot, and that Palace are only prepared to pay 10. The striker is on the list, Kevin, I guess. Are you a fan of Nketiah, take or leave?
Take, absolutely. I would pay the 20, to be perfectly honest. I think Willock was he looked really good when he was at Leeds. He's a different type of striker. It gives us an option that we haven't got at the moment. He's a natural goal scorer. He takes players on. He takes shots on from the edge of the box. He's a jack-in-the-box striker as well. Absolutely, he's Premier League quality. He would give us a real level of option that we haven't got up front.
Let's go to JC.
I think, I mean, he's injured, I think, at the moment as well, which is not surprised. That's what we seem to
do.
The only thing, I was having correspondence with Laurie Dahl yesterday, and he said, let's buy young Arsenal players who can't get anywhere near this Arsenal first 11. And the last time we did that, it was Julian Gray and Tommy Black. I don't know enough about him. I think it's such a shame we missed out on Armstrong. You know, that's the type of player we should have had in our plan. So I would see this, at least we've got a striker in.
Yeah, I play football on Monday nights in Amersham, and that's great. I'm probably the best player there. It's so good. One of the guys there, Dan, is an Arsenal fan, so I asked him last night, and he said, fantastic poacher. I'm talking about Nketiah, not me. Fantastic poacher. But
poaching an Amersham.
It sounds like a book, doesn't it? It's like Agatha Christie novel. Nketiah is a good poacher, but the rest of his game isn't particularly mobile. So in and around the 6-yard box, brilliant. Made me think of Dwight Gayle in a way, in the terms of what he offers to the team. But Jack, is that something that we desperately need to the tune of 20 million?
A bit like Will Hughes, as long as this deal is done on Palace's terms, I'm all for it. I don't want to pay 20 million for Nketiah. I've seen him a few times in the Premier League and he is a threat, but there's not enough to the rest of his game. And I don't know whether we can rely on just a bloke to put the ball in the net, but I like him. And Kev just mentioned his spell at Leeds, and I thought he, he was good then. He you know, showed a lot of promise and went straight back into the Arsenal called him back, I seem to recall. He's part of the first team plans. But yeah, I'm kind of with JC. Looking at the Arsenal reserve list is a bit of a concern when that, you know, reserve list is playing second fiddle to the worst Arsenal team of a generation. It does seem a little bit daft. But yeah, I of the options that I've heard linked with us, if we could get him for around, you know, 10 to 12 million, I think it could prove a shrewd piece of business.
You and JD have just referred to him as a brilliant poacher, and the only thing he can do is put the ball in the back of the net. I'll pay 40 million quid for that. Yeah. That's exactly what we want. Is somebody, if that's the only thing he does every game is put the ball in the back of the net once, then yes, thank you very much, because currently we lack somebody to do just that.
Yeah.
I guess one of my reasons for being hesitant to pay more than that is because I think there's other areas of the squad to still add to as well, not, you know, being Palace, yeah, I doubt we've got tens of millions, but you're right. You know, if we do need to pay for the most, you know, important element of the game, then that's what you have to pay for. But if we're paying 20 or 30 million for Nketiah, I think there's probably better players at 20 and 30 million.
But the problem is you're always going to pay a premium for strikers, always.
Yeah.
There are far fewer of them. Demand far outstrips supply. There are plenty of Will. There are other Will Hugheses. You know what I mean? But there are very few natural goal scorers out there, and he's one of them. And if you're guaranteed 15 goals a season, that's worth 20 million quid, as far as I'm saying. In today's market, insofar as any human being is worth £20 million, you know.
I am on Monday nights. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in, whether Vieira puts him up front on his own with...
We haven't bought him
yet. Eze behind. Yeah, I know.
When we bought him.
Okay. All right, we will do.
Because we've been going for an hour.
Well, it is reported by David Ornstein, I think, in The Athletic. So it does come with some weight behind it. But we will see. Okay, in fact, that actually wraps up questions for this part. We do have a game to preview on Saturday. I mean, technically, we have two to preview, but I think we won't bother with Watford. But anyway, join us after the break and see which one we do preview.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit, because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
When it comes to business travel in Orlando, it's never business as usual. Oh, sure, I could go on for days about all the incredible places to hold meetings, or the Michelin dining, or the innovative industries that'll make you feel right at home. But Dr. Michael Edwards of Ocean Insight said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. So dive in and see what's happening in Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at Orlando for Business.
Right, welcome back to part four of the Fluffy Band Podcast.
Hey!
Sponsored this week by our friends at Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Right. Do we want to preview the Watford game, given that by the time I've edited this, it'll pretty much be kickoff, and shall we just pretend it doesn't happen?
Let's do win or lose prediction for Watford.
Go on then, Jack.
Win on penalties.
Oh, please, no, I need to get home at some point. Kevin?
Comfortable win, which kickstarts our season.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. JC?
Like Kevin, I think a 4-1 win. Everything gels.
Wow, okay. Superb. Let's move on to West Ham then, which I think...
4-1 win. Everything will gel.
Jack, might be a bit trickier on Saturday. The league leaders.
You know what? Yeah, the league leaders, West Ham, yeah. I was really... I think hope was probably the word, that the return of West Ham fans would derail them entirely, and it didn't happen. I really thought... They were the club that benefited most from no fans in, and I thought their return of fans would mean that things didn't go to plan for them last night. I know the game was impacted by a red card for Leicester, which I thought was a valid red card, But they were great, West Ham. They were really good. Their midfield engine room is tireless. Suchek and Rice are just great. And between the two of them, there's probably £150 million worth of current market value in their midfield, which is ridiculous. If you think about, one's a youth product and one would cost them about £12 million only 18 months ago. Their threats down the flank with Kufel and Cresswell, and then they've got an attacking threat with the likes of Fornals, Bowen, Benrahma, and the man up top, Mr. Cardboard Cutout himself, Mikel Antonio, who last night, as Kev touched on earlier, took hold of a situation when Leicester had just got themselves back in the game. Antonio's two goals were brilliant centre-forward play. And we've waxed lyrical about Anderson and Gaye, but they're going to need their best game in a Palace shirt so far if they're going to keep Antonio quiet. That guy is absolutely brimming with confidence. And David Moyes is doing what David Moyes did at Everton, in that he is refining a unit, and that unit is becoming very effective. I know they've got the challenges of Europe this season to come, but with a little bit of depth to that squad, I can see West Ham being in that top eight again and being quite a decent watch, as well as a threat to other teams.
They were nearly relegated 18 months ago as well, which is all the more remarkable. I think your point about the crowd is valid, because I absolutely agree. Let's see what happens if they go 1-0 down, because that's what didn't happen last night. The crowd responded to a really positive performance. I said it at half time to Ed. It's like, yeah, they've been brilliant on the break. That's been their game plan. They've let Leicester have the ball. Ludicrous amount of touches for the two Leicester centre-backs. It's a record for Soyuncu touches by a centre-half in the first 45 minutes. And then I said to Ed, yeah, well, let's see how clever they are when they've got possession of the ball for the whole of the second half. It turned out just as good, which is really worrying. The only consolation is, because at the moment you can only predict a comfortable win for West Ham, the only consolation is they have conceded three goals in the two games that they've won comfortably. And I think they will have to, for the whole of the game, they'll have a lot more of the ball than we did, and we'll be trying to do to them what they did to Leicester in the first half last night. But they look, without having world-class, I don't think many people two seasons ago would put Antonio in their fantasy football team, or Suchet. So without having individual world-class players, they are a really good team at the moment. They've got goal threats from all over the place. And it's sort of, Mikel Antonio is a player we've been linked with several times, and you just kind of go, you assume if he came to us, he wouldn't be that good. But it's taken him a long time. He's 30-odd. It's taken him a long time to fulfil that potential. But he, in his own way, in that second half last night, he was as unplayable as Lukaku was on Sunday. That first half against Arsenal, Lukaku was just this. And also, to be fair, that Chelsea performance did sort of put our performance against them in the first game in a slightly different light, because they're clearly a really, really top class team.
Yeah, Antonio is 31.
Is he now? Yeah,
they got him from Reading, but he was at Tooting and Mitcham. Yeah, they got him from Forest, but he went from Tooting and Mitcham to Reading.
Yeah.
Born in Wandsworth, so yeah, local boy, and then Sheffield Wednesday for a bit, and then West Ham. And you're right, West Ham at 2015, so he'd have been 26 by that point. So it's an unusual story, actually, a journey for a footballer, but he is doing absolutely fantastically. And he was in my fantasy team last year, just want to point that out. JC, what are your thoughts on Saturday?
I agree with everything. I mean, West Ham have spent lots of money over the last three or four seasons. So we have to, and not all of that works. So it's credit to Moyes. I was thinking, if you're thinking about what we're trying to do at Palace, this idea of creating a team culture, and if you look at the West Ham team, they've got Dawson as a centre-back, but you still feel that not one of our first team 11 would go into that team. And that's a difference, not because Dawson is better than Anderson, but because of what it takes to get that kind of sense of culture in your team, where everyone knows what they're doing. We want to, Brentford had a little bit, because they've had that for two seasons or whatever. But that's something that made me the most envious, was the glue, this idea of being able to get a unit working and some exciting players, but everyone playing for the team. So Benrahma, who's skillful, he just plays for the team. He's not playing for his own thing. We rely, and we've always relied on Zaha. They're not relying on anyone. Yeah. And I think that's my point. And that's what we have to really focus on, as our philosophy. So I really think, also, I watched the game last night, I'd be very surprised if we get anything from it, because they're playing that well. I was very, very concerned about David Moyes and his tracksuit. because I reckon what's happened is that his PA or his said, so listen, I'm just going to run down now and go and get your tracksuit. Got to get extra large, right? And he goes, no, medium.
Yeah.
Get me. He looked like a piece of sausage. And I think that probably had an effect on the Leicester players or something, because they were like looking at, I mean, anyway, but that's, but yeah, they're good. I agree with Jack as well about, I thought that playing with no West Ham fans there with their entitlement was going to be, you know, or would derail them this season, but it hasn't. And they were very exciting to watch. Leicester didn't know what to do even before they went down to 10 players.
I worry for David Moyes because he looks to me like he's on a journey that many men in my family started, including me. His metabolism's gone. He's two seasons away from Steve Bruce size.
I thought he was going for it. Yes,
but unfortunately, his face will stay normal size, and the rest of him will be Steve Bruce size, and that's going to look really weird. So yeah. I might write to him and say, just make the most of this season because your disco days are over, David. Simple as that.
Good. Look, you don't just get football analysis; you get sartorial advice on this podcast as well, and health advice. Anyway, guys, I think that's a good part to end the pod. So thank you very much for joining me. JC, great to have you back on.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Thank you.
Good. We'll book you in again very, very soon. Jack, hope you recover from the tough mudder and feel better.
Thanks, mate. It's been nice to be distracted from moving for an hour. So thank you.
And Kevin, thanks as ever for being here. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you, mate. Always a pleasure.
Brilliant. And thank you to Eternity Home Finance for being our sponsors this season. And thank you to our patrons as well for their support. We love them. And thank you to everyone for listening to this podcast. Please do keep your questions coming in. There'll be a post-match pod, a brief one from the Watford game tonight, and then obviously one from Saturday at West Ham as well. And we're back next week with our main free podcast, reviewing those games and answering your questions. But until then, stay safe, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.